Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Buckeyes were unable to capitalize and left nine runners on base, including bases-loaded situations in both the fourth and fifth inning. Rat poison, Paris! Rat poison! Always negative, the media.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
He can only hope to get where we are in our careers, and right? Let's see if old Paris can work his way up the sports writing ladder.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Oh, my God. There's only a 1.1% chance that Will Levis would still be here at the 21st pick. Shut up. You have no idea what you're talking about.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It is the NFL draft, round one, just complete. Kansas City was picking. Took someone from Kansas State.
Yep. Rush in.
Cheap recruiting budget, scouting budget.
Drive down I-70 and hang a right to Manhattan.
So we'll get to some of these picks. We'll get to some different stuff. We'll get to some college football news, a little bit of everything. Here's the story I want to start with. It's a guy who didn't get picked. It's Kentucky quarterback Will Levis. And I don't mean to bag on Will Levis because, like the rest of us, he wasn't a first-round pick in the NFL draft. Not exactly, to be a second-round pick would be quite an accomplishment, which I believe he will be.
He will be but that.
He will be that. He's going to go. But this guy's draft process is one of the wildest draft processes I've ever seen. And it might be indicative of where we're at when it comes to the draft. We've seen guys fall before. Aaron Rodgers slid. Warren Sapp slid, right? Like, Warren Sapp, it was like, you know, I think it was like drug test concerns or something. You know, turns out to be a Hall of Famer. Aaron Rodgers, fine. Johnny Manziel, he slid too, and maybe that for good reason. But like Will Levis had no reason to slide, if you will, if you want to go with the slide, which of course nothing's happened, so I don't know how you slide. But this very week, Will Levis was the betting favorite to go number two overall to Houston and was a 4-1 bet to go number one overall. And he was not selected.
Mm. Didn't he go from like 40-1 or 400-1 to 4-1 for the number one pick?
Yeah, he went
pick,
40-1 to 4-1 because, and if you're not following the story, you won't believe it. An anonymous
even if you are following the story, you won't believe it. It's so
ridiculous.
Stupid. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you the truth. The only truth of the NFL draft is what I am about to tell you. There was a Reddit thread. And I love my Reddit threads. And somebody named Sale Agreeable 2834. That's his name.
The Notorious.
The Notorious Sale Agreeable 2834 posts on Reddit that Will Levis is, quote, telling friends and family Carolina will in fact take him on Thursday, end quote. Carolina having the number one pick. This being the absurdity of the NFL draft, people take Sale Agreeable 2834's word for it and start betting up Will Levis as the number one pick. Caesars Incredible. Called it a flood of bets. So they had to move the odds from 40-1 to 4-1. And if people didn't believe he'd go number one, it was going to be Bryce Young from Alabama, which it was. He became the betting favorite to go second to Houston. On Thursday, he wasn't drafted. And Sale Agreeable 2834 deleted his or her account.
Oh, really?
So nobody was ever tracked down who this person is?
How surprising.
So
one day, years from now, they're going to come forward.
We are not intelligent people. We are betting on something that doesn't. What is this? There's more.
Oh, please. Okay, tell.
There's even more.
Finish the setup so we can go off, please.
At one point, there was a report from a draft analyst at not like Mel Kiper, like anyone you've heard of, but one of these like pseudo reputable football websites. He reported that Will Levis had a deathly fear. This is it. This is the quote. His name is Jacob Infante. Yeah. I'll put it out there. Jacob Infante. Quote, a legitimate concern NFL teams have with Kentucky QB Will Levis is his, quote, deathly fear, end quote, of milk.
Mm. Oh, shut up. Come on.
Deathly fear of milk. I've been told he screams in terror at even the sight of milk, let alone the taste.
I've been told. Who is this jackleg?
Jacob Infante. Maybe it's a fake.
He ended up coming back, I believe, and saying he was being sarcastic, that he wasn't.
I assume.
He ended up coming back. Yeah, I think actually the Levitard show down in Miami reached out to him to come on the radio, and he's like, to talk about this. And he told them, I think, or tweeted at them, this isn't real.
It's a joke, right?
Yeah.
God.
But that's my point, okay? It was treated as real.
Now,
we know Will Levis. We know Will Levis eats bananas with the peel on. We've seen him do that in his social media videos. We know that he's put mayonnaise in his coffee. We've seen that in the things. But those are jokes. And he readily admits he eats almond milk in his coffee normally. So he does not have a deathly fear of milk. The fact that a joke like that could be then treated for real by many, I mean, that thing got aggregated out everywhere. Like, this is the craziest draft where the guy never, like, he was the number one pick and then not picked at all. Does Will Levis even exist? Has anyone ever seen Will Levis?
I'm pretty sure I saw him play live against Ole Miss, but it could have been somebody else in the helmet. You
an
know?
Imposter?
That's right.
Will Levis is a figment of the NFL draft media's imagination. I'm now convinced. He was a top five pick because everyone said he was a top five pick. Everyone who watched Will Levis play football was like, eh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pat, what the hell's going on?
Well, this is what happens when everyone lies for months. Everyone in the NFL lies for months for their own benefit, to game the system, to improve their own chances of drafting who they want to prove. And then, in the most ridiculous, stupid, preposterous dynamic of this, we have this betting industry that just goes with, well, they said it, that some sources said something to somebody, so, yeah, Will Levis is getting drafted high. We better move up the odds on him. And so this is all built on this. What was it Will Ferrell said in Elf, you sit on a throne of lies. This is the throne of lies. Right. I mean, it's unbelievable. And so you get this draft industry that's built on this. And then you get ESPN's ridiculous probability thing.
Yeah, what was that?
Oh, my God. There's only a 1.1% chance that Will Levis would still be here at the 21st pick. Shut up. You have no idea what you're talking about, what your odds are built on, what your percentages are built on. What are you doing? Oh, my God. It's so unbelievable. It's so tiresome.
It's a fake. What are we doing odds on the fake?
It's a complete fraud. Complete fraud.
I didn't think we'd have any Elf references, but the Midnight Pod is already bringing it.
Great movie.
Well,
great movie.
One dynamic of the Midnight Pod is usually, you know, there are cocktails involved. So,
that's right.
You know, might get a little fired up. I guess I already did.
This whole saga reminds me of, was it Laramie Tunsil and the whole you know, yeah, the whole pot issue.
One of my other favorites.
But that was a real thing.
Yeah, that was a real thing.
Yes.
Okay, now, it was ridiculous. Laramie Tunsil was an Ole Miss offensive lineman who someone tried to blackmail by videotaping him smoking a bong hit into a gas mask.
Do you remember? We either podcasted or did our radio show after that night. I remember.
I can't remember. I covered it. It was in Chicago draft. Poor Laramie had to come in.
Yeah.
And discuss it. And then there were all these things about Ole Miss guys buying his apartment and stuff. But he dropped for a reason. Like, they did like him. But then all of a sudden this weird video comes out of him smoking weed in a gas mask. And teams are like, what's going on here? I think I'll just take this other guy.
Yeah.
Nothing happened to Will Levis except this bogus report that he fears milk. That's the only negative. So why did he drop from number one or number two to not at all?
He was never one or two. That's the thing. He was never. That's the problem. All this misinformation, all these people lying, and all of a sudden you've puffed up this, like,
poor guy.
I'd like to know what the NFL's intel was about inviting him, you know, and having him sit in the green room for 4 hours and just kind of, you know, twist in the wind.
The intel was a Reddit post, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, could you please at least ask the franchise, do you have an actual intent to draft Will Levis on Thursday night? Yes? Okay. No? All right.
They're not usually that wrong. I don't know what happened. It's almost like all the GMs were watching ESPN and the NFL Network and all this stuff. And then when the NFL called them, like, hey, you guys think Will Levis the top first rounder? And they're like, oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I legitimately think it just all... Because they don't want to do this, or maybe they do. But, like, poor Will Levis is sitting there.
Was he the only one left? There was a couple. Wasn't there a couple more?
Yeah, or no? There were some late ones. There were some late ones, but I think he's the last one.
Mm.
You know, there were some late picks, but
he's
as a QB, they're not expecting that. And then he's just sitting there. He's got his family, and you could tell nothing was going on. Like, he's playing Candy Crush or something on his phone. Yeah. He didn't even, like... Sometimes you see them, they're fielding calls, like, what the hell's going on? Like, don't worry. We're going to take you. He's just sitting there. Like, he's just, like, talking to his mom. Like,
mom, his sisters, his girlfriend. Yeah,
and his agent, no doubt, is like, just don't look upset.
Yeah.
Just act natural. This is totally natural. I'm often not hired for a job on national TV.
I'm going to sit here for hours being bypassed. I mean,
he's just watching TikToks and stuff of him eating a banana peel.
Once the Vikings passed on him, like, they were the last realistic shot probably to draft him. And so then it was like the last seven or eight picks were just piling on.
Maybe someone jumps up. I mean, the number two pick in the draft at number 29, you know?
Yeah.
No, it was bad because all those teams have good QBs. Like,
you're
in the playoffs, so you're not in a whole lot of that. You know, like they were like Michael Mayer, and I know I said his name wrong. How do you say his name, Pat?
Mayer.
I got ripped. Whatever. He doesn't play there anymore. Notre Dame. Michael Mayer didn't get brought to the thing. They knew.
Yeah, right. He was at home. You know, and that's the, you know, I think there's certain number of guys that get invited, and some of them decline. I think probably for that reason. I don't want to be the last guy.
Yeah.
If you're kind of a borderline first round pick, it's like, nah, I'll just watch at home. I'll have a bigger group. We'll be, you know. So there, we saw plenty of guys who were at home get picked tonight. And that's probably the way I would play it if, you know, unless you're Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud. Although C.J. Stroud was supposed to drop too, wasn't he? There was another throne of lies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. C.J. couldn't take a test or something.
Yeah.
A lot of lying going on there.
Unbelievable.
Do you believe, Pat? Would you draft a guy who eats a banana with the peel on and puts mayo in his coffee? Or is that so much borderline serial killer stuff that you just say no?
I would not draft a guy who eats a banana with the peel on and puts mayonnaise in his coffee and throws 10 interceptions on only 283 attempts and fumbles and has a 151 passer rating, or the year before threw 13 interceptions and has a 148 passer rating. So, no, I would not. Digestive habits perhaps less important than the other areas, but no. I would not draft Will Levis, certainly in the first round.
You know,
he was never that good. He never looked that good. Like, who invented this?
I covered their game against at Ole Miss last fall, and as you guys remember, I mean, like, Ole Miss didn't have, like, you know, the greatest defense. It was improved. They had a decent D line, but it was really hard to tell much about Will Levis because he was just getting run over because Kentucky's offensive line was a disaster. So I remember coming away from the game thinking the guy's got a strong arm, but obviously because he just chunked it down the field because he was on the run, it was just really hard to see anything about him. And a lot of their games were like that. You know, it was really hard to tell because Kentucky's O-line was so bad.
All right. Bryce Young. Ross.
A little
too small or did Carolina make the right pick?
No, I don't necessarily think it's too small. And I think plenty of quarterbacks through the history of the NFL have proven that size, so to speak, doesn't always matter. And I think that Bryce is a good one. And, I kind of opposite of Will Levis, right? When you watched Bryce play, well, number one, he certainly was on a better team behind a better offensive line, but you could tell his decision making and his accuracy was much better. I covered, and Pat did too. And I don't remember, Dan, I think you were at the Fiesta Bowl, but we were at the Peach Bowl semifinal, and Stroud was amazing against Georgia. I mean, it was like unbelievable.
So
like one of the better, one of the better performances of by a college quarterback I have ever seen in a big game, significant game. And so I'm not surprised at all that he moved, he kind of moved up and was two, because he put on a heck of a show against a defense that obviously is full of NFL players.
Yeah, I think both guys have special talent. I am not sure either of them is absolute slam dunk. I will say I think next year's draft there are two slam dunks in Caleb Williams and Drake May. But I think both Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud can be great. And they have the intangibles, they have the athleticism, they have the accuracy, they have the poise and intelligence and all those things that you need. I agree, like, maybe the two best quarterback performances I've seen the last 2 years was Bryce Young against Georgia and C.J. Stroud against Georgia. Bryce Young in the SEC championship in 2021 when he was an absolute magician. And then C.J. Stroud was similar, I thought, in that Peach Bowl. So, I mean, both of them showed against, the best defense in the country.
Yeah, I forgot about that game against Alabama. He, like, got out of everything. Yes. Everything.
Oh,
it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Couldn't sack him. Couldn't put him on the ground. Just spectacular. So, and he put Alabama on his back a lot of this last year. And they didn't get to where they wanted to go, but it wasn't because Bryce Young wasn't awesome.
No.
Bryce Young, to me, is one of the best football players I've ever seen. Just pure college football player. Mm-hmm. Just terrific. Now, does that work at the next level? We're going to find out. But no doubt about his ability, performances, maturity, the whole thing. Same with CJ on all that stuff. The two games I saw CJ Stroud live were both against Michigan. So a different perception. Of him, but I certainly watched him plenty on television. I might have seen another Ohio State game somewhere down the line when he started in the last 2 years, but I don't know. But, whatever. It's a pretty good pick. What about Anthony Richardson? Indianapolis takes him at four.
Crazy.
We've spoken of this. Anthony Richardson, you watch him against Utah last year. You think he's going to win the Heisman. You watch him the rest of the year. You think he's going to the NFL Euro or whatever are we doing? USFL. Or he's transferring down to group of five. Obviously, ridiculous athlete, amazing potential. How much was just the wrong timing at Florida? How much? What do you think? If you got it, you got to say it right now. Is this a bust of a pick, or is it going to come through, Pat?
I would lean towards bust. Now we'll see. Again, you know, we're trying to say it now, and that opens you up to being completely dead wrong. But you know, the big thing is just usually that quarterbacks, if you're not accurate, you're not accurate, and to improve in that area is not that easy. However, Josh Allen has, and Josh Allen was a freak athlete too, like Anthony Richardson, except Anthony Richardson is even more athletic. You know, there's got to be enough that people have seen to be willing to take a top five risk on him. Boy, I don't see it. I wouldn't have done it. There's no way I would have done it. But he is, like, he's an astounding athlete. His measurables are all ridiculous. But quarterback, I mean, gosh, I mean, Dan, how many times have we talked about this, about what makes a good quarterback? It's not necessarily that. It's so much read, process, accuracy, work like a maniac. And he might do all, he might be read, process, and work like a maniac, but he hadn't been that accurate so far that I've seen. I've not seen a polished quarterback. Now, he can get there, but boy, you're asking a lot, and you've got to give him a long runway, 2 years at least probably on the bench before you're asking him to step in.
Yeah, it's hard to say that somebody so incredibly athletic and put together would be a bust, but like you said, for the position, the things that you need most, he struggled, you know, with accuracy. And I was talking to some members of the Florida staff right after the combine, which he obviously lit up completely. And I'm like, what? Like, how did this kid not, you know, win the Heisman? And how did you guys not go 12-1 or something? And the answer was pretty quick. And it was one decision making in processing through the reads, and then two was the accuracy. But I mean, if he can't play quarterback, can he play something else? I mean, he's just a freak.
Oh yeah, preposterous. I mean, you would think maybe. But the other thing, yeah, too, I'll add this. And I'll let you talk, Dan. But you know that, like, people say, all right, can you run an offense that's almost Lamar Jackson-esque, where he's going to run for 1,000 yards or something? He wasn't that guy at Florida. He ran some, but
he's not a speed guy like that.
No, he's 650 yards. He's more of a Cam Newton. He's big,
yeah,
and athletic,
he's big,
and may run you over.
Yeah. But
nobody has made these guys more money than Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, same thing, right? Can run big. Horrible accuracy. Just, you know, up at Wyoming, he threw 56%, senior year 56.3%. You know, career 44 touchdowns, 21 interceptions. Gets drafted by Buffalo. First 2 years in Buffalo, 52%, 52.8, 58.8. He wasn't that good in Buffalo. You know, 16-game season, 2019, he threw 20 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And then, kaboom, it hits in 2020. And I think everyone's sitting there like, well, Josh Allen. Like, every one of these guys should send Josh Allen, some flowers or something.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of work to do with Anthony Richardson. I'll put it that way. There's a lot of work. I would say it's more likely than not he doesn't make it, but I don't know what that's worth. But the Colts, desperate for a QB, taking it. All right, other story of this draft, running backs. Bijan Robinson goes 8th to Atlanta. Jahmyr Gibbs of Alabama goes 12th to Detroit. Before any wide receivers are taken, 2 running backs. Think of that, Ross. Hell of a good players.
Yeah, that's why they are. They are the Bijan Mustard heading to Atlanta, right? Is that right?
Falcons? Yep, Bijan Mustardson.
Bijan Mustardson.
Dijon Mustardson.
Yeah, that's right.
That was his NIL, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I want to say during the draft, the ESPN may have said that, like, the last 3 years of the first round combined for like 16 or 17 receivers or something like that. And I think we didn't get our first one till 20, right? Pick 20.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah, it was like two four in a row, but they were really late.
Yeah. Smith and Jigbo.
Yeah. That surprised me. But Bijan's an incredible player. And, you know, they say running backs now, right, dime a dozen sort of thing. You don't see him picked. You don't see him picked in the first round, right, that often. It would almost seem lately. It feels like that anyway. I don't know what the stats are. But he's an incredible electric player. Falcons got a good one. I sat down with him over the summer, maybe, or last spring when I visited Texas, and we talked to, like, a little NIL stuff, and, like, really smart kid, like, kind of wants to do the entrepreneur stuff, and you saw it with the mustard and all that stuff. So I think they got a good one there.
Yeah, I think he's a star running back. Now, what that amounts to these days, I don't know, but I think he's a 1,000-yard rusher. I think he catches a bunch of passes. You can move him around, you can do a lot of stuff with him. So I think he's really good. I think Jahmyr Gibbs can be very good too, and also versatile because he can really catch.
Fly.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that's part of being the running back trade now, is you've got to be able to split out and catch and play different kind of areas of the field. I think Bijan, one of those guys, like, to me, he just stands out above the rest of everybody else at his position significantly enough that if you need a running back, you get the one who's obviously the best. And I think the Falcons did there. Can I give you a stat, Dan? Can I give you Ross?
Mm-hmm. Fire away.
Yeah. Dude, it's like almost 1 a.m. You can do
yeah. Every player picked in the first round was from a Power 5 conference, and I think it's the first time it ever happened.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great stat.
This is what I got. 9 from the SEC, 9 from the Big Ten, 6 from the Big 12, 4 from the ACC, 3 from the Pac-12. Nobody else outside of that. Not even Notre Dame, which really is a Power 5 team, but an independent. Nobody from any other league. That's kind of where college football is at, I think. And a couple of people actually put the stat on Twitter, and a couple of people are like, well, you know, it's the kids transfer up from – no. I don't think there was any of these guys who transferred up G5 to P5. I think these guys were all P5 from the get-go.
There were some transfers, but not –
Yeah.
Like
– Jahmyr Gibbs, Georgia Tech to –
Jordan Addison, Alabama. Pitt to USC. Right. Like, Boston College gets an asterisk. I mean, that is – I mean, is that Power 5?
Really? League membership, and that means they get the league revenue checks. So
okay,
yes.
Okay. Like, yes. Iowa had two defense – if an Iowa offensive player had made it, would that count as Power 5?
Only if it's a lineman, because that's the only okay. – yeah. That's the only –
yeah.
Yeah. Sean has weighed in with a little correction on you, Mr. 40.
Uh-oh, what?
Kincaid, Kincaid, the tight end.
Okay, he
started at San Diego.
Okay. San Diego University or San Diego State?
I don't know. Sean?
It's late.
San Diego University, FCS.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Toreros.
FCS.
Where Jim Harbaugh began his coaching career.
By the way, we talked about Bijan and running backs. They ended up looking it up. Last year, there were 0 running backs drafted in the in the first round. But the last 4 years, there have been 4. Yeah, that's interesting.
I want to go to my personal favorite draft pick, Paris Johnson Jr. at Ohio State. And that's because, you know, nice guy, excellent offensive lineman. He went 6th overall. Is that where he went? 6th?
Yep. A little higher than expected.
Yep. Arizona jumped up to get him after trading down. My thing about him is he's a sports writer.
Yes.
He worked for the Ohio State student newspaper.
The Daily Lantern. School. The Daily Lantern.
Yes.
Daily Lantern.
He did work, and he wrote a number of different stories on news around the campus, and included covering the baseball team.
Look at there.
I love it.
So, you know, one of our own got drafted.
That's right. That's right.
Right. We should all be rallying behind Paris Johnson. Come on.
These baseball players weren't blowing off an interview with Paris.
Yeah. He can only hope to get where we are in our careers. And right. Let's see. Let's see if old Paris can work his way up the sports writing ladder. Yeah.
As a number six pick, he'll make more money tomorrow or whenever he signs his contract than we will in God knows how long.
Here he is covering the Buckeye baseball team. During the Buckeyes' last regular season game, they celebrated Senior Day by honoring five of their own. He lists the guys out. Ohio State fell to Northwestern in an upsetting loss, 8-2, which concluded the weekend series. The Buckeyes ultimately won. Buckeyes were unable to capitalize and left nine runners on base, including bases-loaded situations in both the fourth and fifth inning. Rat poison, Paris! Rat poison! Always negative, the media.
No, but it's good. Look, he's probably there keeping the scorebook. I love it, man.
Yeah, he's doing it. Quote, here's a quote from Coach Greg Beals. I don't know how many guys who left on base. It may have been double digits, I'm guessing. Paris knew. Don't come with your weak sauce to Paris, Greg Beals. So, right here, I'm reading the Lantern from 2021. Did not cover the team after that, but he was a little busy preparing for a new career. But if you ever want to come back, welcome on the pod. We will take
There you go.
I'll tell you this quick story here. When I was the sports editor of the student paper at Missouri, Derek Chivas was the star basketball player who had come from New York to Columbia, Missouri. He was getting paid, but that was not the stated reason why he was there. He wanted to be there for the journalism school. So I called him and said, hey, you want to write for the student paper? He's like, oh, yes, that sounds very, very interesting. I'll get back to you on that. Never heard from him again.
Never heard from him.
And guess what? He didn't go to journalism school.
Yeah. Yeah.
So go Paris. Way to actually go.
Paris did
do
it.
Journalism.
Paris did it. So congrats on that. Jalen Carter, unfortunate drag racer of Athens. He had quite an eventful fall. He ends up with Philadelphia, which is just ridiculous. If he decides to play, the Eagles, my goodness. And they get Nolan Smith. They get a linebacker from Georgia, too. I had an NFL scout once. This was 5 years ago, and he said his theory is we should only draft Alabama and LSU players. Basically, let it all sort out and just, instead of flying all over the country, just pick. Basically, at this point, it's just Alabama and Georgia. Yeah.
Georgia.
Yeah. I think Philadelphia's like, we're only taking Georgia Bulldogs.
It's working defense. For them.
You're probably better than if you are playing somewhere else. I don't know if that theory really holds out, but Jalen seemed in the interview seemed very, very grateful. And I guess we'll see. That is the wild card of them all. I don't know what to make of Jalen Carter. I don't know him, but there's certainly plenty of reasons to be concerned, how he's going to do it. Maybe we need get him a SEPTA card in Philly so we can ride the train around Philly. Don't give him a car.
Give him a damn driver or something. He's make enough money to afford a driver. But he probably dropped four, six spots, huh? Because they were talking about him top three, maybe definitely top five, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he could have been number one.
Number one.
Could have been number one.
Number one. Number two.
Yeah.
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 I mean, did you watch? They were showing his highlight reel.
Oh, no, he's ridiculous. He's ridiculous.
Yeah.
When he plays. He's a highlight reel guy. Is he an every down guy?
Yeah. And his highlights were you're watching it, and it's it's against LSU and Ohio State and stuff. Because there's a lot of times that you're watching the highlight reel, and it's this guy just, bull rushes Indiana or something, or there's a lot of Vanderbilt in there,
There was a lot of Vanderbilt in the Alabama reel.
Yeah, a lot of that. And you're like, okay, that's fine. But like, I'm like, oh man, he's just destroying. This is, I recognize that helmet, you know, all of that. So, well, we'll see. All right. Anybody else in here? We'll get to our more college talk right now, but just to wrap this up, unless you got something else, what player in here you just like, they picked and you're just like, yeah, that guy's really good. That's a good pick. This guy, you know, so my thing is this, is they're always like need this. And what about this? So we could have got him three picks later and picked up the traded down. And I'm like, as long as you pick good players that will start.
Yeah.
Like that's what Baltimore ends up with Zay Flowers. I'm 100% guaranteed. Every year, Baltimore nails their first round pick.
Always.
They always nail it. And so they sit there and you're like, okay, you're all set. And as long as you hit those guys, it doesn't really matter. So who in this draft did you just see somebody do and just go, yeah, that's a good football player right there?
I'm going to go with Dalton Kincaid, the tight end from Utah, who I can't remember who picked him. It was like in the 20s. But I was there when
Seattle. No, wait.
Okay.
Not 20s. I'm sorry. No. Buffalo.
Buffalo. Okay. Well, great. Josh Allen gets to throw to him. I was there October 15th. They played USC in Salt Lake City. He had 16 catches for 234 yards. He was completely uncoverable. He caught everything. They weren't all easy catches. He has great catch radius and all that business. Runs routes. He's fast. I was like, I'm watching Travis Kelce here. Now, that was also by far his best game of his career. And USC's defense is putrid. But he got drafted that high for a reason. He had 70 catches, 890 yards on the year. And he's very athletic. And again, really a good receiver. We'll see how good a blocker he is. He's 6'4", 242. That's not great heft for a blocker. But so what? You know what? I think he's Travis Kelce Jr., perhaps.
The one that sticks out to me is actually TCU's receiver, Quentin Johnson, picked by the old Chargers, I believe, right? Yeah, 22nd or 21st.
He was Chargers. The second receiver, right? I think, or third.
Yeah. You know, deep threat guy, got a lot of speed. It seems like he catches everything, certainly catches a lot of jump balls down the field, can really stretch the field. Incredible career at TCU, obviously helped lead them to the national championship game.
Yeah. All right, so Alabama got the number one pick in quarterback Bryce Young. We mentioned he follows. There'll be four Alabama starters next year. He follows Mac Jones in New England, Tua Tagovailoa in Miami, and Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, if you will. He's kind of an Oklahoma product. What is he? I don't know. They debate that stuff. I'm not getting in the middle of that. All that said, is Tyler Buckner the next Alabama starter who will be in the NFL? Tyler Buckner transferred, announced his transfer on draft day, tried to overshadow the draft.
Yeah.
From Notre Dame, where he backed up, he lost the starting battle to Sam Hartman, who had arrived from Wake Forest. And instead of sticking at Notre Dame, he follows his former offensive coordinator, Tommy Reese, to Tuscaloosa and becomes the fifth quarterback on the Crimson Tide roster. This is fascinating. We talked, I think, earlier this week that nobody looked good enough in the Alabama spring game. But this is kind of a pull the ripcord bit. I saw a great joke, meme or something, where it was like, they're like, oh, so you're coming, you're going to run the Notre Dame offense at Alabama, but with better players, right? And then it's like some, you know, right?
Yeah, he's going to play for his old offensive coordinator.
But what does it say about Alabama that they're going for Notre Dame's backup?
Not great. Not great at all. Concerning, I would think. I mean, there was a rumor during the winter portal, you know, that they were after Drake May at North Carolina. And then there was a pretty loud actual reports from the Miami Herald, I think. I don't know if they specifically mentioned Alabama, but Miami's quarterback was, you know, there was a rumor that he was going to transfer, and a lot of people thought it was Alabama. So I think Alabama was certainly looking. This one certainly stunned me that they would, and I don't know if it's the offensive coordinator connection, you know, but there are not very many options out there. You know, Florida's in the portal on the hunt. Auburn's in the portal on the hunt. These SEC programs, there's just not any quarterbacks out there. And the last I saw from, I think some Alabama beat writers had said Jalen Milroe, you know, who was kind of in a way, he was in the battle and kind of was a projected starter, I believe, with the redshirt freshman Ty Simpson, that Milroe was going to stay. That his family had said they're staying in Alabama and going to compete. But this one was a little surprising and probably tells you a lot about the Alabama quarterback situation, that they would go out and get a guy, right, that basically is a backup elsewhere who lost the job.
Yeah, I agree, Ross. I think this is a warning sign for Alabama's quarterback situation, which we had talked about. Like, I didn't think Jalen Milroe was anything spectacular, and if Tyler Simpson can't beat him out, then okay. And now you're going to bring in Buckner, and it's like, ooh, okay. If that's the group you're choosing from, I'm not sure you're going to have an elite offense. So, this may be Saban kind of giving some latitude to Tommy Rees, and Tommy Rees saying, look, trust me, this guy, we can win with this guy, or at least we can play this guy in case of emergency, break glass, you know. But it doesn't look like the Alabama quarterbacks we're used to seeing over the last 5-6 years.
But like, if Tommy Rees believed that, first off, Tyler Buckner was not that good last year and he got hurt.
Right.
But he wasn't doing anything before.
No.
I think he had 6 touchdowns. Is that right?
3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Three and five. I mean, I Notre Dame, Tommy Rees is at Notre Dame when they decide to go get Sam Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
So if Tommy Rees doesn't think that Tyler Buck, I think it's fair to assume he did not believe Tyler Buck. Well, Tyler's back. We're good. They also tried to get CJ Carr to come in early. Now, I don't know if you're going to play a true freshman, but Carr didn't do it. He's not arriving a year early. He's still a high school senior, but that's kind of how desperate they were. So if Tommy Rees doesn't think Tyler Buckner's good enough to lead Notre Dame and they go out and get Sam Hartman, I can't believe the argument of, hey, Nick, this guy's good enough. Well, he wasn't good enough at Notre Dame.
Right. I mean, maybe that's how might, down.
Maybe he's better than these other guys. I don't know.
Maybe that's how down Tommy Rees was on the quarterbacks at Alabama. Yeah. I don't know.
And if he's so,
looking for a little security blanket of at least, hey, I got a backup that I know and we can, you know.
Is he a backup? Why is Tyler Buckner going to to Alabama to be a backup?
Well, he's going to be the backup at Notre Dame for sure. So, I don't know. I mean, look, we can't necessarily read all the tea leaves. I will say this. Either way, I don't feel very good about where Alabama's going at their quarterback.
Yeah. Concerning for sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's security blanket, but also, if the kid was already going to transfer, might as well throw another one in the room to see if you can, you know, just kind of roll the dice on another one to see if maybe it fuels competition, right? It makes, you know, coaches always talk about more competition, the better. It fuels things and improves, players improve. So maybe it's part of that as well. But yeah, it's an odd one. I mean, this guy was three touchdowns, 5 interceptions. He completed 55% of his passes last year.
Yeah.
Ho-hum.
He was pretty good in the bowl game against a bad South Carolina defense. And other than that, he didn't show anything.
Coach Prime.
No boy.
He's getting a little blowback. Although this is just like the reality of when you flip a roster. But he's had, I don't know what number we're up to. Do we know what the number is now?
Oh, man.
18 in the first day. I think 28 players. This could be late. 28 players since Monday have entered the portal. 41 since April 15th have left Colorado. You have your normal guys leaving. Somewhere I heard he had 20 guys returning. It's been a big thing. There's been all sorts of juicy stories and quotes from reporters about, you know, he didn't know the guys' names. He's telling people, hey, you know, hey, buddy, you probably get out of there. Guy claimed he couldn't get tape of his practices, which is kind of just a procedural thing. Obviously, there's a lot of bitterness about Coach Sanders. Thoughts on all of this, Pat and Dion, flipping a roster, which we knew he was doing, but it's different when you see it in reality, I guess.
Yeah.
For some people.
Yeah. So this, a couple of things is the scope, like the scale and the openness of it is unprecedented. But this is what has gone on for a long, long, long time in college sports is players get pushed out, players get cut. It's usually not this open. It's usually not in these sorts of numbers, but it happens. And here's the thing. Dion said it was going to happen. He called it. He said it in December. He said, y'all, basically get ready to transfer. I'm bringing in my guys. I'm bringing in my Louie. And he took over 1-11 team. He didn't have a lot of Louie there. So the Louie was coming from the inside or from the outside. The other part of this now, too, is where I think institutionally you're going to stomach more of this because the players have more freedom than ever, which means they're also more disposable than ever. If they can come and go, you can tell them to come and go. So this is college football 2023 taken to the high level. We've pushed the envelope on where this is going in Colorado. This is the kind of the logical extreme of it. But this is what's always happened. It's just more open. It's just more numbers. And then B, welcome to the real world and the modern world.
Yeah, you know, there's that little NCAA rule that kind of gets overshadowed. A first year coach can end scholarships for players. And we see it happen quite a bit. In fact, Billy Napier did it in turnover the roster last year pretty significantly. I think there's two big differences here. Pat touched on some of it. Number one is it is happening more significantly than ever. I mean, I've got the number. Dan mentioned the numbers, and I don't know. Here's like some updated stuff. 41 scholarship players from Colorado have entered the portal since the window opened April 15th. 28 of them entered after the spring game. So that is more significant, obviously, than normal. But the second thing here is that the coach is not dancing around it or not hiding from it. He is just out there with it, right? He is just full throttle out there with what he's doing. I mean, I think he gave a radio interview, right? And he said something about the old furniture, getting rid of the old furniture. I'll say this, probably not. It's nice to have that brutal honesty, as reporters love brutal honesty like that. Probably not the best time to do it. We're right in the middle of a lot of transition in an evolution of college athletics. A lot of court cases are ongoing. And I just got in from Dallas, where I was there for a couple days at CFP meetings, and there are commissioners there. The 10 FBS commissioners and Jack Swarbrick on the CFP management committee. And one of the commissioners mentioned to me earlier this week, quote, we got to stop this stuff from Dion. Because I think they know everything he's doing and saying is going into a file from a lawyer's taking it and putting it into a file for a court case at some point down the road or a current court case that's going on, or it's going to be brought up in a congressional hearing about athlete compensation and cuts in employment. So not the greatest time. We love the blunt honesty, but not the greatest time, Coach Prime. And I wanted to read Brian Howe, who does a great job covering Colorado, the other day. He listed off remaining scholarship players from the 2022 season. Okay, this list is so short. I think there's 21 of them. 21.
Okay, 20.
Remaining scholarship players, but he listed 22 people. It's so short, he had to throw in Ralphie the Buffalo.
Well, yeah, Deion's not messing with Ralphie.
No, that's not. The one person he's not going to mess with, or the one entity.
So, the optics, everyone's all fired up. I don't think there's any question. Coach Prime is extremely colorful and entertaining. In person, he's probably a complete jerk.
I think that's
you're not his
very
guy,
accurate.
Yeah.
Total, absolute dismissal of you. And he's not going to care. There's no pretending. There's no, right. He's just like, hey, buddy, you're out of here. Right. Yeah. There's no like, well, Jack, we think you did a lot of good work here. Mm-hmm. And I want to shake. You're going to do some good stuff. Call me if you ever need anything. Right. There's none of that.
No. It's like, don't call me.
Don't call me, whatever. I think he's probably an absolute jerk. He's a terrible person to be around if you're not his guy. If you are, then you'll love him. I don't care. Whatever. The question is, can you build you turn the roster? Like, I was surprised he was getting rid of linemen.
Yeah.
I would never get rid of a lineman.
Well, and let's mention this, Dan. I don't know that he wanted all those players to go into the portal.
No, some guys left.
Yeah, there was a few of them, right, that earned their number during spring practice that they probably didn't want to lose, and they lost them.
Right. So that's going to happen, but there were some – I mean, to me, he needs linemen. He needs a ton of them.
Yeah.
That defense looked terrible in the spring game or whatever that thing was, but I don't even know who's still going to be there. This is still probably a 4-win team. They have a hard schedule. I mean, they could start like 0-4. I think
their schedule's really tough. Yeah, I think they could realistically start like 1-4, or so. Yeah, I'll have to pull up their schedule, but it's pretty tough. There's one really winnable,
TCU,
an FCS
Nebraska right off the bat.
Opponent. Okay, yeah. So here's their schedule. It's TCU hosting Nebraska, hosting Colorado State. That's the one you would think they would win. They should win. At Oregon, hosting USC, at Arizona State. Ooh. I mean, they could absolutely start 1-4, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, and which is not unusual, actually, for Colorado to start 1-4.
This team was so bad. They were 1-11, but of their losses, they lost by an average of 34.5 points or something.
They're also, and that's why, the guys he's getting rid of are bad football players, almost uniformly. Not completely, but
also, what to piggyback off of what Dan said earlier about, Deion is, he's from afar, right? He's entertaining, but up close, maybe not so much. He's all kind of business and very blunt and maybe kind of a jerk. How is he going to handle losing?
Which he has not done. Yeah.
Hasn't done it a lot at all.
He'll promote. He'll keep promoting. I mean, I look at this season. It's almost like he's hyped it too much.
A lot of hype.
I think if he wins 4 games, he's done all right. I mean, there's only so much you can do. Now you bring in all these guys, but how do you build a team?
See,
this isn't like an AAU team.
No.
Even when you watch you watch Coach K and John Calipari try to do it in basketball, and it's a struggle, right? Yeah. Like some years they get it together and the team's great when they just would bring in their one and dones. And then other times, it's feast or famine. So that's going to be interesting.
The one problem too, with like being that brusque with the players that you're not that interested in, to not caring about the backups or the guys you didn't inherit, to playing favorites, it's going to be tough in recruiting. It's going to be tough to build depth and build quote unquote culture in the locker room. because all the parents want to know, do you care about my kid?
Mm-hmm.
And if you show no sign of caring about my kid, then my kid's A, not going there, or B, if he does go there, he's transferring. And
imagine the negative recruiting.
Oh, for sure. And you need, again, to like the Dan's point, you need like 10 linemen on each side of the ball. You need depth to play in major college football. And you can't just be like, well, I only care about five guys here, so screw you. That's not going to work.
I mean, I can imagine a rival school, you know, USC, Oregon, whatever, taking this quote, right? Dion said he had to clean out the old furniture. You're talking about 21 year olds. That will be used on the trail.
Yeah.
I also wonder if this is going to be like those Cliff Kingsbury teams that were just all offensive players.
Yeah. Right.
So
I signed seven slot receivers and two linemen. Is that a problem?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, look, we're going to see, and I'm a believer that this is going to be fascinating. It's better for Colorado than whatever. This is the Colorado 2023 class, high school class. Now, granted, he had no time to put this together. Cornerback, running back, wide receiver, edge, linebacker, QB, cornerback, offensive lineman, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, linebacker, wide receiver.
Yeah. I noticed the trend.
Not a lot of heft, yeah.
That's a lot of wide receivers, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of
five. Shedeur Sanders needs some guys to throw to.
Six wide receivers. He's got 33 coming in. So look, he's got older linemen. I don't know. This is gonna be wild. Ross, you were at the playoff meetings. What is new? The schedule is been officially set for 2024. Tell us about it.
Yeah. They really zeroed in. I think we talked about it back in October at a meeting in Dallas. They kind of zeroed in on the dates and we reported them, but now they maybe more so made it official and somewhat announced it. We'll have I think there'll be more of a release or statement the next few days, maybe next week, that officially announces everything. So to set the scene here, this is the 2024 playoff. So the first expansion, first 12-team playoff. So the first round, which we played at home campuses, of course, you'll have three games on the third Saturday in December, the third weekend in December. And then you'll have one game probably that Friday night. And so those three games on Saturday will go up against the NFL regular season games. That's the NFL's first weekend that they play on Saturday. So that's the first round. The quarterfinals will be played on New Year's Day, three of them. And then one will either be played on New Year's Eve or January 2nd. Kind of depends on the calendar. I think that's still kind of up in the air. I'm assuming it's going to be on New Year's Eve, but who knows. And in the semifinals, and this is the one that people are, you know, probably most upset about. The semifinals are about 10 days after New Year's Day. It's, I think, on January 9th and 10th, which are a Thursday and Friday. Now, that hasn't been completely set yet. And they're doing that because the NFL wild card weekend is that weekend. And they'll go up against NFL regular season games, not playoff games. And then, of course, the championship game will be on MLK Day, actually. I think it's January 20th, 2025. So the big theme here, and we talked about it back in November and October, I believe, on the show, is, you know, college football doesn't have a choice right now for 24 and 25. They're going to have to conflict with the NFL. And in the first round, we see that happening. And in the semifinals, we see them having to play semifinals, huge games on weekdays.
That's going to be, that's just where you're at. Going against the NFL regular season is, I'll be interested. I think you can fight back. How about this stretch, though? So we're going to have a semifinal on a Thursday. And then a semifinal on a Friday. And then two wild card games on Saturday.
Yeah.
Then three wild card games on Sunday. Then a final wild card game on Monday.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like watching football on TV.
Yeah. Hand me a cigarette when that's over. Holy
the logistics,
moly.
The crowd on a Thursday night at some bowl site or whatever. Eh. But if you just like watching TV,
yeah. Woo. Yeah.
Not bad.
Phenomenal. So, not bad. So to add one more thing to this, we've talked about this, broached this subject about week zero, you know, and turning week zero into week one, and you shift up the whole regular season, which shifts up everything by a week. That can't happen in 24, 25. It's too early. I think some people think it's too early to happen in 2026 as well. But at some point, some commissioners believe it's an eventuality that you've got to shift up the regular season so you can avoid these NFL conflicts. If you shift up the regular season by 1 week, conference championship games go from first week of December to Thanksgiving. And then you play your first round on the second week of December. And that's the weekend the NFL is not playing. And then you play your second round. You position your second round where it goes in between the second week of December and New Year's Day. And then New Year's Day you have, and this is what college football leaders want, New Year's Day, you want your two big semifinals on New Year's Day. And then you keep the championship game from going too deep into January. So that's ideal. It might not happen for a few years because of all the schedules and issues that come with shifting up everything by a week. It might not happen at all, but the Football Oversight Committee, I think, is going to be exploring it pretty seriously going forward.
Well, reclaiming New Year's Day would be awesome.
Yeah, it would. That'd be fine, except, you know, here's going to bring up this quake concept again, but I like if the more you could do to actually protect finals for the players, academic finals,
final exams. Oh, is this school too? Are they going to school too?
Classes. Oh, yeah.
Shoot, I forgot about that.
Final exams on which they are graded, for which they get grades for their university that they attend. If that could be part of the equation and you could work the calendar maybe around that, that might be good.
I'm sure the person that takes the finals will be there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Ain't here to play school, Pat.
Did I tell you the story about the massive academic fraud? Not massive. The academic fraud I was part of at Missouri?
I'm not, but I'm not surprised that you needed to cheat to get through that fine, illustrious.
No, I was the one who was cheated off of. Involuntarily by three football players.
Well, that shows they weren't that smart. Mm-hmm. Were they hoping to get a 2.3?
Hey, brother, we got out with a 90% on that Econ 51 final.
So three football players cheated off of you, and you all got a 90?
We all got a 90. 45 out of 50 on the multiple choice. It happened.
Proud of you.
Two starters.
All right. Last story. We got to go. Quick one. Bad Ways to Die is the name of this story.
Oh, no.
Yeah. man named Shiv God. Daily Mail coming through for me. What do you want me to do? It's not a happy. I don't know what this story is. It's the Daily Mail. Shivdala Sharma. He's 82, so he had a good life. Mr. Sharma lived in India, Alwar area of India. And he was 82 and he decided to urinate on the train track. So he was walking and he got, you know, the bladder's tough at that age and he was near the train.
It sounds like the beginning of a really bad joke, but go ahead.
It's as true as the Daily Mail says. He was relieving himself on the train track and the train started coming. And it doesn't end how you think. But it was a ways away, but then just as the train was coming, this cow, got out on the track and, hit the cow. And, so as this story says, a pensioner was killed by a flying cow. After the animal was hit by an express train and flung 100 feet through the air.
Dan,
this is why we don't have train travel. This is why we don't have train travel in America.
Well, this is why it's brought to my attention.
Is this a Will Levis milk story? Are we sure this is true?
So, and another guy was nearby. We're not sure whether he had been. So
unbelievable. Death by cow after hit by train. Death by train wrecked cow. My God. What a way to go.
She goes to take a leak, and then all of a sudden there's a cow flying at him.
And this is ridiculous.
Smash. He died instantly. So our thoughts and prayers are with Mr. Sharma and his family.
Hopefully none of his family members are tuning in.
So, you know, we've been hyping up the trains lately, but there is a dark side. There is a dark side.
That's true.
Maybe. Careful out there. Careful.
All right, Pat's trying to catch a breath.
Pat's dying over there. I mean, it's just like, just what a horrible timing.
Bad.
Struck damn cow.
Struck had by to walk a flying out right cow while you're trying to take a leak. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Also, could you imagine over there in, as you said, this is India, right? I mean, like at the funeral or like that week or something, like, you know, hey, you know, how did your dad pass? Well, funny you should ask. I mean, like, what do you even say? Killed by a flying cow, hit by a train he's pissing on the tracks.
Obviously, the story got out because the Daily Mail found out about it and told the rest of the world.
Yeah.
They really do. Find out about it.
And cows are sacred animals over there. So this is, boy, the train conductor. Ooh.
That's true.
Yeah, just be careful. Be careful.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe our movement to make train travel the mode of transportation, you know, we might have to dial it back. We're going to think about it.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we're going to table it for a minute or two. I still think this is worth it, but we'll see. All right, we got to go. We'll be back next week with more draft talk, more stuff going on in college football, never a dull moment. Subscribe, leave us nice reviews, tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you later.